This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
I'm just starting to record a little bit late. I apologize to those who came late, but I'm just starting to record now. We can create a source sheet. There we go. No matter the Mishnah says, what does God say when the Mishnah in Sanhedrin says you can't leave the dead body who's been executed? If someone's been executed for a capital crime, the body gets displayed, hung for a short time. But the Torah says explicitly, you may not leave the body to be exposed overnight. Ki klilat Elokim talui, because the curse of God is hanging there. And the rabbis say, what is God's, what does that mean? That's a very confusing expression. You can't leave the body overnight because the curse of God is hanging there. And so the rabbis understand it. God says, Kalani Miroshi, Kalani Mizroi. It's the image of God that's hanging up there. In the executed person, the capital criminal, the murderer, is still created with Tzelem Elokim and is entitled to human rights. Love your neighbor as yourself is dependent on our neighborliness. Okay,
also a greatest thing to love. To love your neighbor. Well, love is a bit more than you have some obligations.
Right, we don't know what the content of... I don't know what the content of Vitzelem Elokim Nivraha Adam. I mean, you have an obligation to love God, so I would assume, therefore, you have an obligation to love everyone, every human being, because of Vitzelem Elokim.
You have to respect, because he is Vitzelem Elokim. But in Leviticus, it's about love, which I think maybe a bit
stronger,
a bit more than respect, and maybe that's why it's limited to a small group.
Okay, maybe that's interesting. So that I'm not sure what it means when it says they were created, but says that human beings were created Bitzel Melakim. I'm not sure because I know that I'm obligated to love God. So I might have thought. I'm not willing to accept what you're saying.
In Bereshit chapter 9, it said that because people are created in the image of God, you may not kill them because then what if you bring them? It's good.
Right. That's what I'm hoping for. But I assume this means something more. But you're right. I hear you. Okay. Yes.
To me, it seems that these two phrases aren't in the same category, the same mishkal of, you know, one is setting that term, which is nobody is better than anybody else, Ben Azai's. So we all start from the same place. We're all made from the same godly expression. The next one, Rabbi Akiva seems to talk about then how we relate to each other, and that may be filling in because we all are part of this. Therefore we love each other. So it's almost, you know, when it says Klal Gadol, what does that mean? Does that mean it's a primary, meaning the first thing you learn, or does that mean it's the most important thing? What does Klal Gadol mean? So it would be a question that I would have. And so it would seem Ben Azai's is it comes first. You have to understand that we're all starting from the same place. Then how we relate to each other.
So. Get that. Okay, this is good. Okay, so let's go with where Art was. This is how I think Moshe Halbertal said something more or less what you said. Okay, he says like this. He's a great Jewish studies professor. He says these are human rights. But he doesn't actually tie it to this source, but I can. And then these are membership rights. There's no country in the world. There's no group in the world that doesn't have something called membership rights, that it's the job of the United States government to protect United States citizens. It's the job of the French government to protect French citizens. If they don't take care of their citizens, so then they're not doing a good job of being a group. However, if they do so at the expense of human rights, at the expense of some other group, then you've got a problem. Okay, so in some ways, we expect Jewish tradition to prefer re'echa, okay, to give preferential rights to their fellow Jews, as long as they're not at the expense of the non-Jews. Of course, all of this gets a lot more confusing in the what?
With politics.
In a democratic Jewish state. Because a Jewish and democratic state, now we're back where we started in the first class, is a Jewish and democratic state has to provide equal rights to its citizens. And this position is very problematic when it comes from a government official, the chief rabbi of Tzfat, who is paid by the state, and is arguing for membership rights for a group that's, who is he representing, the state of Israel or the Jewish people, and how are we supposed to navigate that combination?
You could argue that you have to look at the type of citizens. They might not be the same citizens.
Aha.
If you go that far.
Okay, so we're going to go there. Excellent. So what I want to do now is, as Dorothy said right from the beginning, why does he say that? Okay, what does he base himself on? Let's just start right off with what Rosh Moel Eliyahu bases himself on. It's a tough verse, okay? I'm going to send you in Chavruta. What I want you to do as you look at this mitzvah, which is lo techanim, the apparent commandment to discriminate, to ask yourself the question, what, why, and who? Okay, what is the discrimination that we're supposed to have? Why are we discriminating? And who is it that we're discriminating about? And already within it, you can sort of try to understand where is Rav Eliyahu coming from and where might I be coming from? And how could we try to interpret this text in multiple directions that will allow us to understand where we're going. I mean, you've got 10 minutes. If you just do this little passage in the Torah, Dayenu, but if you go on to see how it's interpreted in source 3 in the Gemara and in source 4 by the Rambam, okay, Hariza Gam Mishubach. Okay, so you've got 10 minutes to learn with the person next to you and go for it. Look, this isn't an easy text, but I think it's interesting.
It can... With today's politics, you know, we should really wipe our brain of what we know of today's and 60, 73 years of politics.
There's a happy ending to this text. I have to say that although in general about my learning there's not a happy ending because Rav Eliyahu is out there speaking publicly, I think that you see these texts right from, the more I learn, the more I feel that the more you know, you can choose to read these texts many different ways, but I don't think that the simple reading of the texts is the way the Rav Eliyahu has taken them. Let's look at, you also can see that very quickly. It's a hard text about anyone to say, wipe out totally. Wipe them out totally.
Can I ask just a question? What's an idolater do? Okay, besides worshipping whatever their deity is in a different way through an idol, are they doing other bad things like, I don't know, killing each other or whatever?
Right.
Or if they're just worshipping in a different way.
What's the big deal?
Is it Buddhists or Hindus could be called idolaters, but I'm sure there's many good, and Rambam might even say some Christians are, and they, a lot of them do good as well, so...
So
it's a temptation to make Jews one who is ending their life.
I think that next year I'm going to give a 6-part series on Jewish, non-Jewish relations and then I'll do a whole class on Christianity and a whole class on Avodah Zarah, and I think that would be very interesting. What?
On Tuesday
evening. I'll let Alex know. But your question is a good one. And the answer to your question is we don't really know. There's certainly a whole... it depends on... If you ask academics, they'll tell you that the Bible, when they talk about offering up child sacrifice and all of that, there was just part of a...
axe they had to grind to make the non-Jews look really bad. But the simple reading of the Torah, let's say that, you know, like kind of stick with the Torah as it's, is that the non-Jews were doing all sorts of, that these Ovdei Avodah Zarah were doing lots of bad things, including offering child sacrifices, and the Meiri certainly assumes that. I don't think I got the Meiri onto your source sheet, but he basically says that's those words. But all right, let's stick to the pshat for now. The simple reading is that you've got the what's the what? Let's start with the what. What do you have to do? What do you have to do with these people?
Get rid of
them completely. That's the simple reading. Okay, the word is lo tichanim.
Tichanim.
Okay, lo tichanim. What's the shoresh of this word? It's hard to tell. So it could be, right, chen otam. It seems like this is otam, right? Don't chen them. Okay, so what's this word, chen? Okay, so one thing is it could be graceful, be grace.
Grace, not graceful.
Another possibility?
Chinam.
Could be from chinam. We can put it with the, if we read it with the mem, then we'll say chinam means free. Another thing for, so.
I can turn around and say tamachem.
Comfort, yeshev. Okay, they didn't do that, but they went from this chana. Okay, what does this word mean? Like machane, chanaya. Okay, don't give them a parking spot. No parking. Okay, machane. So the simple reading, I think we'll all agree, is don't give them any
place.
Okay, don't give them, JPS translated it well, I think. Give them no, grants them no quarter. Okay.
I need to go back a step. Who's the them?
Who's the them? Right, okay, I didn't do that. So that was, that's the next question. Who's the them?
All the people who've been expelled.
It's clearly seven nations.
Okay, so the pshat, one thing, I don't know what the pshat is. It says the seven nations. Okay. If the Tosafists just get like, what? Okay, it's the seven nations. This is a mitzvah gets this for the seven nations. Do you know any Girgashis? I don't know any. We're done. Okay, this mitzvah's over. anyone who knows a Chiti has, but we don't know them, so they might. So this mitzvah's done. Check. Okay, you saw that the Rambam reads it more broadly. Okay, as all Ovdei Avodah Zarah.
Yeah.
Why does he do that? Because of the why. What's the why? Why are we supposed to wipe them all out?
So that we survive.
So that we survive. Why do we need to wipe them out to survive?
Because otherwise we'll become like them.
Okay, because they are going to seduce us. The temptation is just too great. We're going to become like them. Assimilation.
We're going to start killing our children, right? Yeah.
What'd you say?
Start killing our children.
It's very seductive. Okay, if you just read the Book of Kings.
What's so interesting about this? It doesn't say they're going to harm us. It says we are going to be attracted to them and the way they do things. It's voluntary on our part.
Right, so if we're talking about they're killing children, then I don't understand how that jives with we'll be attracted to it.
Okay, there's two things
going on. Other than certain moments where we want to kill but it seems to be that those are two totally different. One is abhorrent practices, and one is that it's extremely attractive practices.
The two can go together. Okay, look at America. A lot of people want to be American. And there's a lot of things going on. I'm sorry. No, but there's really... abhorrent and seductive are not separate from each other. And it could be first of all, maybe it worked. It had a certain power to it. But certainly it gave you a sense of a certain amount of control. Anala, and it came from depth of emotions and passions, and apparently if you read the Book of Kings, it was very attractive. And the rabbis of the Talmud asked your question, like, what was so attractive about it? And they told a story about how God had mercy on us at some point and threw that temptation into a cage, and we wiped it out because we just couldn't handle that temptation. And that's why they had so much desire for Avodah Zarah, and we look around and we're like, what's so attractive? All right, but that's a different story. They found it very, very attractive. And so I think that we'll say there's two things going on. One is they deserve to die. And two, we have to enforce it, because if we don't enforce it, we're going to find ourselves entrapped as well. Okay, so that is that. But once you lay it out like that, then you can already start to feel the possible solutions. Okay, what are the possible solutions? If you don't want to interpret it, so if you want to interpret it narrowly, how would we interpret it narrowly? One thing we can do is say it's just about the seven nations. The other thing we can do, even if we go the Rambam's direction, we can say it's just about idolaters. If you're not an idolater, then it's no problem. Okay.
The Arab students weren't idolaters.
They were not idolaters.
And those were some of them Christian Arabs? Because the Rambam could say
that the Christians are idolaters. Okay, so let's hold. Yeah. So that's so this is the Rambam. Let's look at the Rambam. The Rambam understands it all of these ways. You're not allowed to have grace on them. You're not allowed. First, the Gemara understands it all those ways. You saw them. The Gemara says you can't let them settle on your soil, O Tehanim, grant them no quarter, nor can you say they're beautiful, nor can you give them a free gift. And it starts off with that in the Rambam.
Interesting thing about the gift, because when Yaakov was meeting Esau, his enemy, and he was worried that he did give Dorah. He was told we should give gifts and be ready with a sword just in case.
No.
And that's it. With an enemy, with my brother. Yeah. Well, he might be his enemy, yeah.
I think you're raising an interesting point. Okay, let's go ahead, Gary. You're doing okay. Read the English. We may not drop a covenant. The Rambam. We're skipping down to the Rambam on page 2.
We may not drop a covenant with idolaters, which will establish peace between them and us, and yet allow them to worship idols, as Deuteronomy states, do not establish a covenant with them. Rather, they must renounce their idol worship or be slain.
All right, already there, we can just, wow, okay, the Rambam's made a big reform. Okay, either you reform your evil ways, okay? If you reform your evil ways, then we don't have to kill you. That's already a big step. Okay?
That's what he said to the Jews in the
Inquisition.
Okay, you're not comforted yet. It's a big step in the right direction. Okay. Keep going.
It is forbidden to have mercy upon them. As Deuteronomy states, do not be gracious upon
them. Lo tichanim. Keep going.
Accordingly, if we see an idolater being swept away or drowning in a river, we should not help him. If we see that his life is in danger, we should not save him.
Okay, so let's stop here. So first, now he's already interpreted lo tichanim as really only applying in its full, in the sense of war. Okay? No, he's not. We haven't gotten to that. Right. Never mind. Keep going.
It is, however, forbidden to cause one of them to sink or push him into a pit or the like, since he is not waging war against.
Okay, there we go. Okay, it's the full forces of...
You don't have the responsibility to say, but you are not permitted to
actively kill. You don't have to go around killing everyone who's violated the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach, unless they're actively waging war.
I knew somebody, I won't say his name, and there was an injured person, I don't know if it was Christian or Muslim, and he helped him medically, and it was on a Shabbat. And the religious, one of the religious person next to him said, my rabbi says you can't do that, you shouldn't do that. And he says, well, my rabbi says you should do that.
The Chasam Sofer says you absolutely must. It's obvious that you have to. Who was that rabbi? Never mind. Yeah. That is not normative practice. No, I just want to say, like, right upset. Normative practice is that you absolutely, absolutely must save him. Rav Moshe Feinstein was very, very clear that you must save them. Rav Chasam Sofer, very clear that you must save him.
Even if they are Buddhist idol worshippers or whatever.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And based on what's coming next. Okay, go ahead.
Waging war.
Yeah, still in the middle of the underline. To whom does the above apply?
Okay. To whom does the above apply? The Gentiles? It is a mitzvah, however, to eradicate Jewish traitors. Minim and apikorosim.
Okay, I just want it so this way. I underline this because, first of all, because it's interesting, but it also just clarifies that it's not racism here. Okay, we're talking about killing people in general because we're worried, because we're tough on crime, and because they're tripping us up. But it's not because they're non-Jewish. It's not racism. We're even worse towards the Jewish traitors than we are to the non-Jewish traitors. Why? Keep going. He explains why.
And to cause them to descend to the pit of destruction, since they caused difficulty to the Jews and sway the people away from God, as did Jesus of Nazareth and his students, and Sadduc, Matthias, and their students. May the name of the wicked rot.
Okay, so we're not going to push that guy into the pit over there that you met that day when the guy life was being saved. But those people, we are really troublemakers. We have to really worry about
amongst us.
And
immediately, I thought Rabin and.
Yeah, the Nahon, okay, yeah, this, and you can definitely not like it. It's a harsh religion here. It is a religion of deen. This is very strong deen, but it's not racism, right? Yeah.
How is it that Rambam is totally ignoring the fact that this seems to be mitzvah tluya ba'aretz? He's taken this to being any
Nahon
worshiper anywhere, and this, I mean, the beginning of this, the context of this pasuk is, very specifically,
because
only when you are in the land that you have been brought to, because this is the holy land that God has given you, not where you're living in other places.
You're totally right, but the Gemara did it first, right? The Gemara in source number 3 interpreted it very broadly. Lo techanim applies to not call it. But then he says, "Don't pronounce them as graceful. Do not give them a free gift." And that is already not a mitzvah.
Well, the rest of the Gemara that could be reading when you're in the land that God has brought you.
Okay, I don't think they interpret it that way. So they take the mitzvah out of the mitzvah tluya ba'aretz, although the piece of don't sell them land does remain a mitzvah tluya ba'aretz, a land-connected commandment. So, it gets worse. Here you go. Go ahead, Art. It's good, right? Yeah, wait, nice.
From the above, we can infer that it's forbidden to offer medical treatment to an idolater, even when offered a wage. If, however, one is afraid of the consequences of fear, that ill feeling will be aroused, one may treat them for a wage, but to treat them free is forbidden.
Okay, so here we already get into the
Mishum Eivah. Here the language of the Rambam is Mishum Eivah, which comes from the Gemara. We're afraid of evil will, and its correspondent is Dor Cheshal. Okay, we have to always keep in mind, of course, so the Gemara says if you don't save, or the Rav Moshe, if you don't save non-Jews, then they won't save you. We have to save them. Mishum Eva. We're very concerned about that as in the basic level of saving non-Jews, even if, look, it's very complex. Next year on Tuesday nights, I'll do a class specifically on Pikoach Nefesh, and we'll learn the Chatzam Sofer where he brings it to a fuller level where he says, basically, we have to have good relationships and whatever. Yes. So anyway, keep going. Art, you're doing great.
With regard to Gil Toshav, since we are commanded to secure his well-being, he may be given medical treatment at no cost.
Okay, so I think he goes on now to interpret lo tichanem in all of the other ways. Matanat chinam, chanaya bakarka. Oh yeah, he says we have in halacha 3. Keep going. Read halacha 3. Go ahead. Keep reading.
It's forbidden to sell them homes and fields in Eretz Yisrael. In Syria, one may sell them homes, but not fields. One may rent them homes in Eretz Yisrael, provided that the neighborhood of idolaters is not established. Fewer than 3 homes doesn't constitute a neighborhood.
Okay. I'm just showing it up to you everything so you can know exactly. Now you know where, this is it. This is where Shmuel Eliyahu comes from. Okay, but it already says here, yes, you go ahead.
So when they're talking about homes, are they talking like one individual house or apartment, or are they talking about courtyards where there would be multiple family units around courtyards?
I think they were assuming homes.
Okay.
But, okay, it's all out there. But the key to re-understanding, which you guys have already picked up on, is the question of, with regard to a Ger Toshav, since we are commanded to secure his well-being, he may be given medical treatment at no cost. And then again, at the last line that's underlined, a present, however, may be given to a Ger Toshav. So there's a totally different relationship. There's another category of people called Ger Toshav. So what we've seen in the Rambam so far is 3 categories of people. The worst is the Jew that's tripping you up. Okay? You got to really be careful about the Jew that's tripping you up, because you have an intimacy with the Jew who's tripping you up, and it's even more seductive when the cool kid in class is doing Avodah Zarah or whatever he's doing to try to trip you up. You have to really worry about that. Then the next category of evildoers that we also have to rid ourselves of, but we have to rid ourselves of only when they're making war with us, is the Avodah Zarah, the idol worshiper. And then there's a third category of people called Ger Toshav. So that's the category we have to get our head around what they are right now. Go ahead, Dorothy, it's your turn to read. Let's read that in source number 5.
Why is it forbidden to sell them land?
No, I'm skipping now, skipping that source in the interest of time. Going my goal now is to understand what is a Ger Toshav. What is this category of people that we do have warm relationships with? This mitzvah doesn't apply. Exactly.
Six precepts were commanded to Adam. The prohibition against worship of false gods. The prohibition of cursing God, the prohibition against murder, the prohibition against incest and adultery, the prohibition against thief, the command to establish law and court of justice. Even though we have received all of these commands from Moshe, and furthermore, they are concepts which intellectual itself tend to accept, it appears that from the Torah words that Adam was commanded concerning them. The prohibition against eating flesh from a living animal was added for Noah, Genesis 9:4. Never states, nevertheless, you may not eat flesh with its life, which is its blood, though there are 7 mitzvot.
Okay, I have to, in the interest of time, I'm just going to, we've got this idea called the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, 7 Noachite laws. In the next halacha of the Rambam in source number 6, I've underlined, anyone who accepts upon himself the fulfillment of these 7 mitzvahs and is precise in their observance is considered one of the pious amongst nations, Chasidei Umot Olam. Okay, it's not like to get into Yad Vashem as Chasidei Umot Olam, you have to risk your life and not get any money for it. If you take payment, then you're not considered one of the Chasidei Umot Olam at Yad Vashem. But here, all you have to do is do no evil. Okay, there's only one one positive mitzvah amongst the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, and that's that you should have some sort of law system. All the rest is if you don't do these six bad things, then you're considered the righteous amongst Gentiles, and you merit a share in the world to come, and you are called a Ger Toshav. That's what a Ger Toshav is. And then you leave the category altogether of the people that Lo Tzichanim was talking about. And not only do you leave that category of people, but they become actually part of your community. As you can see in source number 7. Go ahead, Shoshana, read source number 7.
If your kinsman being in straits comes under your authority and you hold him as though a resident alien, let him live by your side.
Okay, this is a very confusing verse. But the very confusing verse, but the simple reading is, when you have a Jew that becomes poor, you have to treat him nicely like you would a Ger V'Toshav. Okay, so the paradigm of who it is that you have to support, treat the Jew like you treat the Ger Toshav, you have to support them. So the Ger Toshav is someone that you actually have an obligation, not only do you not have to kill them, but you actually have to support them. You have to be nice to them, and you have to have a relationship with them, which is the relationship that we have between Jews. Yes.
How is that translated into Ger Toshav or resident alien? There's a vit here.
Yes.
It's two things. You have the Ger and you have the Toshav.
The JPS understands that they are the same. That this the Ger Toshav is an expression that appears a number of times in the Torah.
I know, but this doesn't say Ger Toshav.
I know, but you can. Well, here I'll show you also that this is part. This is standard interpretation because the Rambam, I also understood. Look in the source we spent most of the time in Halakha number 7. He says a present may, however, begin to a Ger Toshav because you have an obligation. Sell it. You can. The stranger in your gate so that he may eat it. Oh, there it says, the ger asher b'sharecha tidena ve'ochla. And there, too, it means ger toshav, that you give the food to the non-Jew. And also in Halakha 2, where he says, the ger toshav huil v'atah mitzuveh l'hachayoto marpinoto b'chinam.
That there's a category called Ger Toshav. There clearly is a category called Ger Toshav or something else. But here it doesn't say that. It says Ger V'Toshav as if they're two people.
I understand. I'm not disagreeing with your reading. I'm telling you that it's not standard rabbinic interpretation, and that I'm proving to you by showing you how the Rambam interprets it in Halakha 2, where he says that the Ger Toshav, since you are obligated to give to take care of him, lahachayoto marpinoto b'chinam, that's the end of source 2. That is he. Where does he learn that from? He learns it from this verse. That's the Ger Toshav has to live with you. So I understand your question. I think it's an excellent question. In the amount of time that we have tonight, I can only just show you that the Rambam reads it my way. Okay, that my reading is, that this reading is standard. It's not me, Shamrakasoy, coming out with something crazy. This is standard interpretation that Ger Toshav, that even though it says Ger V'Toshav, this translation, which is also not my translation, is a standard translation, and it's the translation of the Rambam. That Ger Toshav, we have an obligation to support them and take care of them in the same way as we have an obligation to take care of Jews. I didn't go through all of the sources just because they're not so easy to show that describe our obligations to the Ger Toshav, but the obligations of the Ger Toshav are significant. They more or less are like Jews, even though you can't marry them and you can't, but you have one of the obligations of the Ger Toshav is that they're resident aliens, that you have to help them find houses. To be a Ger Toshav, you have to do the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. So then the question, the Rambam also said, so it seems to me, like I would just finish my class here. Oh, look, it's such a simple answer. The Rav Shmuel Eliyahu thinks these people are not Gerei Toshav, and therefore this obligation of Lo Tichanim applies to them. And I say, but wait a minute, they keep the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, so of course they're Ger Toshav. Okay, we could start to get into the specifics of the technical. Why technically they might not be considered Ger Toshav? But I'm not going to take the time to do that. The Rav Shmuel Eliyahu, I think, is actually not going to disagree with me in general. Nachum Rabinovich, who's the Rosh Hashiva of Ma'ale Adumim, he does not have left-wing politics at all, has applied this category of Ger Toshav to Arabs in general. They're Muslims, they're monotheists, they, in general, keep these mitzvahs. I'm certainly, this is not my chiddush to say, oh, look, these people are gerim toshavim. It seems almost obvious. You could find some technical reasons. First of all, we can only accept ger toshav from a technical perspective in front of a Beit Din. We only do that in a time where there's a yovel, where the yovel, Shnat HaYovel, the Jubilee year, is an application. Those things make sense. Okay, you say technically they're not Gerim Toshavim, but to go from that to let's apply, if you say they don't get all of the rights of the Ger Toshav, meaning we're not obligated to treat them as equal citizens, the idea of the Ger Toshav is really basically the concept of permanent residents that they're not in your citizen group, they're not members, but they have the rights of membership rights without being members. They're permanent residents. And that's the idea, and it seems so very simple.
Are the Sudanese and the Eritreans that we discussed last week get a show?
Now, maybe you could put them into this category, but you might not, because you might say they're not really residents yet, right? But I think if you can't put them in the category of Ger Toshav, then you probably can't let them stay in Israel. If they don't keep these basic Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, then from a halachic perspective, you'll have a hard time settling them in the land of Israel.
What did you call them, Zara or Nachri?
What?
What did you consider them, Zara or Nachri?
Well, you obviously won't have all the same obligations to them, but if you had a halachic state, so you can't sanction, let's say, idol worship in the country. If you had a halachic state, then you'll have a problem of trying to figure out how to say. You won't have this easy thing. But here we have a situation. I think the idea of the Ger Toshav could apply certainly to Sudanese, if you wanted to extend it. But then you could also set limits. They don't yet live in your community. These people live in our community. They are resident aliens, or they're residents. I mean, they lived here before us for the most part. It seems obvious that they fit into this category. Why does Rav Eliyahu not do it? I think it has to do with source 8. Source 8 has to do with, to what extent do we consider them peaceful? To what extent do we consider them peaceful? If you don't consider them peaceful, then the obligation to take care of them, obviously, if we don't have to take care of our, we don't have to take care of our enemies. If you consider them your enemies, then we can start to work differently. And I think that is what's ultimately lying at the core of Rav Eliyahu's position. But it's a very problematic position. I want to, it's 9 o'clock already, I want to just look at two sources to close with these two sources. What we've seen so far, so now we've got, is that we have two types of non-Jews, the Oved Avodah Zarah and the Ger Toshav. The Oved Avodah Zarah you have to kill. There's no in-betweens. There's no neutral ground. Okay, the Odeh Avodah Zarah deserve to die. It's a machlokas, disagreement between the Rambam and the Ramban, whether we should go around and start enforcing that all the time if we had the power. Everyone agrees if you don't have the power, then you don't have to go around killing everybody. We don't have the power. We're not going to go around killing people. But it seems as though if you don't keep the seven mitzvot b'nei noach, then you're in the category of wicked, and we have no relationship with you. And if you are in the category of ger toshav, if you keep the seven mitzvot b'nei noach, then you're in the category of chasidei umot olam, and we have an obligation to take care of you, and we have an obligation to help you find a house, and we have an obligation to treat you as an equal citizen in Israel. That is the simple reading of what we've got. And that is where the Rambam in Source 9 comes in. Go ahead, Shoshana, keep reading. You didn't get to read too much.
Similarly, it appears to me that a resident alien should be treated like a Jew with respect to proper conduct and kindness. For behold, we are commanded to sustain them, as Deuteronomy 14:21 states. You may not eat any animal that has not been properly slaughtered. Give it to the resident alien in your gates that he may eat it. Though our sages counseled against repeating a greeting to non-Jews, that statement applies to idolaters and not resident aliens.
Okay, so here he's just said, look, all of the rules of chesed, okay, forget the rules of equality to a citizen, human rights, obviously apply to non-Jews here, to gerim toshavim. But to the ger toshav, you not only do you have the obligation to give them their rights, to not discriminate against them, you actually have to give them all of the kindness, chesed, gemilul chesedim and derech eretz that you would give to a Jew. And then he says this thing that just shocks the heck out of me. Go ahead.
Even with respect to non-resident aliens, idol worshippers, our sages commanded us to visit the Gentiles when ill, to bury their dead in addition to the Jewish dead, and support their poor together with the Jewish poor for the sake of peace. Behold, Psalms 145:9 states, God is good to all, and his mercies extend over all his works. And Proverbs 3:17 states, the Torah's ways are pleasant ways, and all its paths are peace.
This is just, I mean, I think, of course, there's nothing new here. You knew it. But the thing that's interesting is to sort of remember, wait, just a second ago, we were talking about how we have to kill these people. And it's okay if we don't push them over the edge, since they're not making war with us right now. And then it turns out that those are the very same people that that we have to take care of mishum darchei shalom. If you ever had anxiety about Darchei Shalom, why do we only save their lives mishum Darchei Shalom? Now we can understand why we only save their lives because of Darchei Shalom. Because really, they ought to die. They're people that deserve to be executed. And even though they deserve to be executed, mishum Darchei Shalom, we're going to give them tzedakah. We're going to take good care of them. We're going to be nice to them. And that gives us a sense of just how extreme the tradition is in terms of being extending kindness and towards non-Jews. Not really here, whether they be the wicked or the good non-Jews. So certainly the resident, anyone who keeps the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, is to be treated like a Jew, and everyone else is to be treated Mishum Darchei Shalom, with kindness, even though we know they're really are, I don't know what you say, whether what you think about them keeping us, not keeping us.
I have a problem with the translation.
Okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead. I didn't translate anything. It's Rabbi Truger.
Go back to the beginning to number two.
Yes.
Goyim is translated as other nations.
Uh-huh.
This lodges many nations before you. So why on earth is Goyim here translated as non-resident aliens, idol worshippers. So, in respect to other,
as opposed to the Geri Toshav.
No, still.
Because it says, because here it says, in the first line it says, this is how you have to treat Geri Toshav.
Right, and next one is a field of Hagoyim. The center of Hagoyim, hello, non-resident aliens and idol worshippers. There are other. nations that somehow are living amongst you.
In the third line, it says, Ein kuflin lehen shalom, zatz begoyim, velo beger toshav. So the opposite of goyim is ger toshav. You could say the Rambam's not clear in his language, but I think that the translation...
The translation is wrong. And the translation is misleading. The translation can't in one place say other nations, in the same place with the same words say non-resident aliens and idol worshippers.
I'd have to look now. I have to go back and look because there's a lot of issues with the Rambam in general about where it says idol worshippers and where it says goyim. You know, there's issues of the text and what's original. So I'm not really sure. I hear your anxiety, but it does create an opposition between goyim and ger toshav. Right, the text sets up an opposition between
them. That's fine. I don't have a problem with Hebrew.
So just to be clear, so Rambam says we let the person drown and then we fish his body out and we bury him with our people.
No, I mean, a separate fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't have an obligation to save your life, but I do have an obligation to bury you now that you're dead.
Right next to where
because I'm looking for peace.
I hear your. That's why it's so shocking. But that is what it seems to say.
That's why we can't look for consistency.
The Rambam. Or perhaps in rabbinic text in general, that here they're articulating what seems to be obvious is they're articulating what the person who violates the seven mitzvot b'nei noach deserves in principle, and then what he actually gets is something altogether different, and that makes perfect sense. To me, that's there's in principle you deserve to die. In actuality, we're going to treat you with a lot of chesed. Okay, my closing source. Catherine, you want to read this story, number 10? I understand your frustration. Luckily, I don't. That's why I don't translate it myself, because I don't want to take responsibility. This way you can be mad at Rabbi Truger.
I came to parties, I learned in the States for many, many years, and then I said, I have to learn stuff in the Hebrew. The English doesn't make sense. And here I am, 40 years later, the English doesn't make sense.
Okay, good. So luckily you learned Hebrew. yes, okay.
Shimon ben Shetach dealt in flax. His students said to him, let us ease your burden. We will buy you a donkey, and you will not have to labor as hard. They went and bought him a donkey from a desert nomad, and a pearl was suspended on it. They came before him and said, Rabbi, henceforth you will not have to labor much.
Okay, let me just stop so we can make sure we're getting it. Shimon ben Shetach, you know who he was when he lived? Tell me, somebody, when did he live? Who was he? He was the Zug. He was the head of the Sanhedrin. Before Hillel and Shammai, okay, 100 before the Sphere, Lifnei Sphira. So he was a big guy. I don't know why he was dealing in flax, because flax is a cruddy job, okay? It's smelly and bulky and doesn't pay very well either. So he was, it was a huge, flax means that you're like picking seeds, Pishtan, and you have to soak them in the water until the pieces fall apart, and then you can turn the seeds into fabric. So it was a very cumbersome, and so the rabbis, his students wanted to help him out, and they bought him a donkey so that he won't have to drag so much, schlepping is hard. And they bought him a donkey from a desert nomad. It was like he won the lottery. Okay, a pearl was suspended on it. So they said, oh, there's good news. You don't have to work now. You won the lottery. And he says to them, keep going.
And he said to them, why? They said, we bought you a donkey from a desert nomad and a pearl was suspended from it. He said, did its owner know about it? They said, no. He said to them, return it. They said, even one who forbids deriving benefits from property stolen from a Gentile acknowledges the universal opinion that the Gentiles' lost property may be used.
Okay, let me stop you for a second there. Okay, so here, so now the rabbis, the student, the rabbi and the students are having an argument. They're trying to argue it out. So Shimon ben Shetzach says, did the guy that sold it to you know what he was giving you? And he says, no, of course not, obviously not. So you have to return it, says Rabbi Shimon ben Shetzach. And they're totally confused. Why would you return it? You just got it from a non-Jew, a desert nomad. It's important that he's a desert nomad. Why is it better that why is it important that he's a desert nomad?
The donkey is very important.
The donkey is really important in the desert, yes, and more.
He's not Jewish. He's a desert nomad.
He's for sure not Jewish, and more.
He doesn't know there is a present next to
him. He is not a Ger Toshav.
There's less. You don't have to worry. So he's not a Ger Toshav. You don't have to worry about the. He doesn't live in a community, really, right? He's a nomad, so you don't have the same situation of concern. You know, who's going to know what's going to happen? What's going to happen? So who's going to hear about this? Not so many people are going to hear about it because he's a nomad. So they say, why would you return it? It's not. Maybe you think that you're not allowed to steal from the non-Jews, but certainly you'll admit that finders keepers, losers weepers. Okay, this is the mitzvah to return lost objects is la'achicha, to your brother, and it kind of makes sense because finders keepers, losers weepers, and it's he won't return to you, so you shouldn't. So you don't have to return to him. The returning lost object is counterintuitive. That's what he's saying. Okay, that's what the non-Jew is saying. That's what the students are saying. The students are saying there's really no reason for you to go beyond the letter of the law to take care of this non-Jew. Okay, go ahead. Finish it off, Catherine.
He said to them, what do you think? Is Shimon ben Shetach a barbarian? He wants them to say, blessed is the God of the Jews.
Okay, I think there's two endings to this story. The ending of the story for Shimon ben Shetach and the ending of the story of the editor. The editor, why does Shimon ben Shetach say not to return it?
To return it.
I'm sorry. Why does he want to return it?
PR.
Yeah.
No, that's the editor.
Because I'm not a barbarian.
I'm not a barbarian. Halacha shmalacha. Okay? He says, why are you getting out all of your thumbs to prove to me that legally speaking I should be able to keep it? I want to be a good person. I'm not a barbarian. I don't want to take a legal loophole to keep something that doesn't belong to me. What? Lifni, well, he doesn't even say it that way.
Because it was beyond what the law
it seems. Right, exactly. It does seem to be lifni mishort. I agree with you, Sean. It seems to be lifni mishort adin. But the way he phrases it is, the deen allows for misjustice. You might be able to technically. Sometimes you can justify things technically within the letter of the law, but that doesn't make them moral.
No, not only that. I mean, he said it's a fabulous. Totally observant of the law and still be a barbarian.
Exactly.
So he's making that sometimes the legal status is the lowest point of human acceptable behavior.
And not moral behavior. Just the low, right, exactly. The lowest point of legally acceptable. And that's Shimon ben Shetach's position. You could see that the rabbis are bothered by that. And they come along and say, right, the editor then comes and leads up and says, what was Shimon ben Shetach? How could he be saying that about the halacha? He must have meant to say that he wanted a good PR move. Okay? But Shimon ben Shetach acts first and foremost out of a sense of morality. What's the right thing to do? And here I'd like to just say, everybody knows what's the right thing to do. The right thing to do is... You live in a democratic country. It's based on equality. 20% of the people in our country are Arabs. If we want to build a community with those people based on peace, then we have to build a community with those people based on peace. And if we don't do that, then we'll be barbarians. And it's just obvious. As Moshe would say, I might be able to legally justify not loaning. Even let's say I could legally justify it because they didn't stand in front of a Beit Din, because the Shnatz HaYovel is not in force right now. But if I do so, then I'm in danger of being a barbarian. And then, in addition to that, of course, there's the problem of the PR move and what it's going to do for our nation. So it's really very problematic. You don't need a class on this to know what the right is, but it helps to have an understanding of where Rav Eliyahu is coming from and why he's just plain wrong.
It's what's the name of
that rabbi? Rabbi Shmuel Eliyahu. He was this far from being the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, and
is he still the chief rabbi?
Yes. But he almost was elected to be the chief rabbi of Israel of Jerusalem, and he ran also for the chief rabbi of Israel. We haven't finished seeing him, so so it's important to know when you see his name, so that you can make statements not appropriate.
The fact that the Jew buy Arab land in Silvan, for instance,
uh-huh.
Is that based on the same thing?
They use it. I think that's a different issue. I thank you all very much for coming. Those of you especially who stuck it out for the whole of the whole series. But for those of you who came right at the end, that was also very helpful. Nice. It was lovely.
This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.